10 years ago, when the Clinton administration raised HIV/AIDS as a security issue, there were fears that the pandemic, particularly in the hardest hit countries in Africa, would bring about state crisis, state collapse, the collapse of armies, simply because so many individuals were infected with HIV, particularly people in critical positions in government ministries, in military forces, that these states would no longer be viable. And this was really a fear, not only for the Clinton administration, but also in the wake of 9/11 for the Bush administration, thinking that there would be more ungoverned spaces on the planet in which terrorism and anarchy could foster. That was really the stimulus for the UN Security Council taking cognizance of HIV/AIDS in its very, very first debate of the 21st century in January of 2000 at the instigation of the United States.
So has perception of the HIV/AIDS pandemic changed since then?
We know a lot more about HIV/AIDS and security. The epidemic has evolved, and there have also been some very major responses to it, not least the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, PEPFAR, which has pumped billions of dollars into HIV and AIDS programs around the world. And I think this agenda has now come of age, and what we see is that the alarmism of a decade ago has dissipated. States are not collapsing. Armies are not imploding. But there is a host of issues that we still need to be concerned about.
Now, you also mentioned violence against women as being a major factor, and we see that a lot in countries like the DRC. Would you explain?
Any woman who is exposed to acts of sexual violence is at a greater risk of receiving HIV. The act of violence itself is an increased risk factor, and very often the men who perpetrate these acts are themselves at high risk of being infected with HIV. And in situations of conflict, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that sexual and gender-based violence, in particular rape, are major risk factors for transmitting HIV. And this is a factor that has really not been sufficiently taken into consideration.
The report talks about the transition from war to peace actually increasing the risks of HIV transmission. Why so?
In many situations of war, populations are quite isolated, they're quite static. And so the possibility of HIV transmission, say amongst a population in a refugee camp, can be lower than in a regular civilian population. Now, with the ending of a war, refugees and displaced people will return home. You may see a lot of investment going into certain towns. They may become boom towns. They may attract sex workers. They may attract impoverished young women who get drawn into sex work. You will see soldiers disarming and going, soldiers who may have become infected with HIV during their service.
You say in some cases AIDS is being driven underground. What do you mean?
In most countries of the world, we see that the epidemic is concentrated amongst groups that are on the margins of the law or beyond those margins. People like injecting drug users, like sex workers, like gay men in countries where homosexuality is illegal, trafficked women, and so on. And these populations are, on the whole, sufficiently stigmatized, marginalized, even criminalized, that they rarely have interactions with the authorities that are straightforward and open, and therefore they are difficult to access, difficult to gain the confidence.
Would you give us a few of the recommendations your report makes?
One of our recommendations is for a greater focus on sexual and gender-based violence across the board. Another set of agendas is to do with the uniformed services. What we find is that the most effective methods for controlling HIV and AIDS in armies and uniformed services is when responsibility is vested not so much in the medical services but in the command of those institutions. And that goes for peacekeeping forces as well as for national armies and for police. We're calling for attention to the effects of HIV and AIDS on local government institutions in the hardest hit countries. While states themselves may not be in crisis, very often what we find is that local government services are affected.